This year has taken a toll on each of us, and our state has had to withstand enormous pressure and strain. But we as a state have survived. We've proven that if we each do our part, together, we can get through this.
That's Delaware Governor John Carney earlier this year, looking forward to where the state is right now, emerging from its coronavirus hibernation, with mask mandates lifting, cases declining, and vaccination numbers rising. And of course, there's still lots of federal relief funds to be spent. I'm WHYY's Mark Eichmann.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne. The state's legislative session is nearing an end with a budget surplus to spend and debate remaining over issues such as guns, police reform, minimum wage, and marijuana legalization.
We delve into these issues and more with Delaware Governor John Carney and take your questions for him over the next hour on Ask Governor Carney from WHYY and Delaware Public Media. Delaware Governor John Carney has faced significant challenges in his time in office. He came into office facing a budget deficit that topped $300 million, and he'd been sworn in just 2 weeks before a major prison riot would shine the spotlight on conditions behind bars. His first term ended last year amid the unprecedented challenges of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, about a year, half a year into his second term, he joins us this afternoon for a special hour we're calling Ask Governor Carney, WHYY production in partnership with Delaware Public Media. I'm Mark Eichmann, Deputy Managing Editor of WHYY's Delaware Desk, here with Tom Byrne, News Director at Delaware Public Media. Governor Carney is joining us from his office in downtown Wilmington to answer your questions on a range of issues facing the state. You can join the conversation at 888-477-9499. We're also taking your questions via social media. You can use the hashtag AskGovCarney. Governor Carney, thanks so much for joining us for this hour to talk about what's been an eventful year and a year and a half for your administration. I guess an eventful year and a half for all of us. Has there been a part of being governor over the past year that you've really missed as a result of this pandemic?
Well, there is. First of all, thanks for inviting me to be with you. I've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy for some time now, my friend from across the river, and was delighted to hear that you want to have a segment on Asking Governor Carney. It has been an incredible first term, and now briefly into the second term. People ask me all the time whether being governor is what I expected to be. I think they know the answer, given in the unprecedented time in which we live. My answer always is, I'm not sure what I expected, but it's been two or three times as hard as I expected, particularly this last year. Fortunately, we live in a state here in Delaware where people treat one another as neighbors, even during difficult times like this, especially like in difficult times, and really have pulled together. We've tried to follow the science in responding to COVID-19 to keep people safe. We have the opportunity to keep hospitals, chambers of commerce, legislators, lots of various interest groups, get them on conference calls on a weekly basis to really keep the communication lines open. It's proven to be very helpful. Everybody seems to appreciate we talk to the mayors in each of the towns on a biweekly basis, and we've been making progress. Now, if you look really of the graph of the peaks of hospitalizations starting back in the spring of last year, then conditions got better as we moved into the summer, and then the Thanksgiving, December holidays peak again in early January, then the decline, and then the little mini peak that we've just been through. And now, as vaccinations continue to flow into people's arms, we're really seeing much better health conditions on the ground. It really is a relief for everybody. I was at a fundraising event for the Delaware Art Museum the other day, and of course they had limited capacity there, but everybody was so excited. It was just after the change in mask wearing guidance, just to be there and to be there outside, talking to one another and feeling like we've made it through this to a new stage, and we certainly have.
Governor, is there something you're looking forward to personally to being able to do again? All of us have kind of had to put so many things on hold for you personally, or is there something you're hoping you can get back to now that things are starting to get a little bit better and people are getting vaccinated?
Yeah, you guys know I'm a big sports fan. You know, my wife and I went to the Phillies game just the other night. They had increased the attendance, I think, or the fans that they allowed in to something around 10,000. But still, it's pretty sparse and spread out a lot. You know, I can't wait to go to a Blue Rocks game, to our high school tournaments, maybe to the lacrosse championships up in Connecticut, to a Phillies game with full crowds. It's still a little ways away, but you can see that it's coming. What, just dying to go to a Blue Hens football game with a full stadium.
So as things are getting kind of more relaxed and folks are getting back together, are you concerned at all that because it feels like things are going back to normal, that sort of reduces the incentive for folks who haven't gotten vaccinated yet to get vaccinated because, hey, things are back to normal. Why do I need to do this? We can already go back to the Phillies game. I don't need to get a vaccine.
Absolutely. Very concerned about that. And it started with the surprise kind of announcement from CDC, 2 weeks ago, about mask wearing. And really good news in the sense that people who are vaccinated really have lots of protection and therefore they don't need to wear masks in public. But people who are not fully vaccinated should continue to wear a mask. And they must not have thought through what enforcement of something like that entail. Because we don't know which, you know, at the time we were about 50%, a little bit over 50% vaccinated and a little less than 50% unvaccinated. You just don't know which 50%, right? And so it was difficult communicating that. Folks who don't want to wear masks, I think have chosen not to. I've seen great compliance. I go to the Wawa every morning for my coffee. Everybody's wearing a mask. I think they're doing it. You know, and I think there is some confusion about whether it's mandatory or not. I think it's preferred. People feel a little bit more comfortable if other folks around them. I know employees feel more comfortable, our own state employees. If people are masked, we will require a masking for in state and public government offices and getting services. And in schools, you know, most of the school children aren't eligible to be vaccinated yet. And so they need to continue to wear masks. And so it's a little bit more complicated. But again, it's getting to the point where people can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And my bottom line message is get vaccinated and then you don't have to worry about it. We're now around 60% overall. We'd like to get to 70%. We are going to come forward this week with some incentives to try to get folks are a little bit hesitant over the goal line there.
Is dinner with Governor Carney on the line? I've seen that some of your colleagues doing that.
Yeah, we've looked at what other like we're not going to be as generous as what I from Governor DeWine.
No $1 million lotteries.
Yeah, five times. So $5 million. And similarly with higher ed. We like the higher ed idea for children. We'll have drawings for those, smaller incentives for people to get that. We want the incentive to be right there, right in front of people, so that when they get the vaccine, they can get a card. We'll go over that this week, and then maybe have a drawing later, which would include who's been vaccinated. Like we really want everybody to pull together for Delaware, so that they can enjoy the things that they enjoyed before without mask wearing and social distancing and the rest, and just feel very comfortable about it. You know, there are still people that are at risk, and we need to be conscious of that and respectful of those folks, mostly people with pre-existing severe health conditions.
Governor, you, with all this in mind, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend, first big weekend since the mask mandate was lifted. In your presser last week, your press conference last week, you noted there would still possibly be outbreaks among unvaccinated people. Is that something you worry about, particularly on a weekend like this one? And if there were such a outbreak among unvaccinated people, is there a state response to that in terms of restrictions, testing, or is it just you got to weather the storm?
Yeah, it is a big concern, for sure, as I mentioned last week, because even though we're 60% vaccinated overall, the vaccination rates for people 65 and older, so the people who are most at risk, is like 89% for at least one dose and about 80% for fully vaccinated. And that compares with the younger adult group, which is like 18 to 35, which is like 35%. So you can see there are a lot of people, more people unvaccinated in that group that you worry a little bit more about, with more risky behavior in bars and restaurants, at the beach, you know, dancing and, you know, having a good time for sure, but a little riskier without masks on. We know one of the things that we've learned over the last year plus is that the best protection against the spread of the virus is in mask wearing. And it's really, when you think about it, it's a small measure to take to protect yourself and to protect others. We've also learned that there are a lot of people who are COVID-19 positive, but they don't have severe symptoms. So they don't really know it. They don't go get tested. And so therefore, if you have somebody, they get into an environment where risky behavior, not a lot of mask wearing, you could spread it around. So yeah, that's a big concern. Other than to try to convince people to get vaccinated, we're gonna team up with restaurants. I know the Starboard in Dewey Beach has been really encouraging and putting incentives out there themselves to get their employees and others just to, in recognition of that risk. And we just need to lean into the vaccination side of it. There's just really no way to, even though you know that a majority of the people that age group are not going to be vaccinated, likely to enforce it in a way that's fair and that's going to help us, you know, really with the ultimate goal of getting people vaccinated, getting people to voluntarily comply with the kind of limited restrictions that we will continue to see.
We're talking with Delaware Governor John Carney and asking for your questions as well at 888-477-9499. You can also use social media. You just use the hashtag AskGovCarney. So, Governor, quickly as we come up on a break here, what does next school year look like for Delaware kids?
Yeah, it looks good. I'm really excited about, first of all, we need to make sure that we continue providing opportunities for children to learn during the summer, more than any other summer, right? And so Department of Education, Secretary Bunting and her team have been working with the schools to provide high quality instructional material for children during the summer, really emphasizing the younger children, third grade and under, to make sure they're getting, they're focusing on reading and maybe, you know, big campaigns to do that. We have the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which provides books for the younger children, just to make sure our number one goal in education is making sure every Delaware student can read at grade level by grade three. And in a lot of places, we're not meeting that objective. And it's important. The way to do it is to get the children to read, to encourage them to read, to help them with their reading. And so we want to see that through the summer and lead up to having all our students back in school for in-person instruction in September. I just heard, well, you all heard on the report at the top of the hour, New York City Mayor de Blasio, same objective. And excited, we'll have, I know parents are and students as well.
And we'll have more with Governor Carney on the other side. And you're listening to Ask Governor Carney, a production of WHYY in partnership with Delaware Public Media. I'm Mark Eichmann here with Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne, talking to Delaware's 74th Governor, John Carney. And we are taking your phone calls at 888-477-9499. And we're shifting gears just a little bit away from the pandemic and into some more legislative items, Governor. Tomorrow marks the one-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd at the hands of the Minneapolis police, which obviously kicked off months of protests around the nation and, of course, in Delaware as well. And we heard lots of calls for reforms in Delaware for changing the way police interact with the community, especially Black residents. And here in Delaware, a big part of that reform call has been criticism of the state's law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights. Governor, does that Bill of Rights shield officers too much and kind of hinder transparency?
Yeah, so with respect to that issue with the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights, you know, the devil really is in the details. And when you think about it, ordinary government employees get a certain amount of protection from, you know, lawsuits, given the work that they do in public, and a certain immunity. And I don't pretend to be an expert with respect to the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights. And so my hope is that folks look at it carefully to make sure that it strikes the right balance. What I do know is the things that I think are more important are things that are in my budget and that I think get a pretty wide approval from the law enforcement community, by the way, as well as the advocacy community with respect to body cameras, which we've put funding in the budget for and which there's support in the legislature for. And as I said, I think in citizen kind of review boards, again, the devil is in the details. But most importantly is the rules as it relates to the use of force. And because when you think about all these incidents that we've read about in other parts of the country and even to a certain extent here in Delaware, it's those rules of engagement, when to use force to control a suspect is what it boils down to. I think we had made changes last year to the use of force in state police. And I think the training to the use of force, I think, is critically important too, which we've done as well, in addition to de-escalation training. You can see in these incidents, and we see them now on body cameras and cell phone footage that standbys take, of how sometimes relatively benign interaction turns into something much more serious because de-escalation techniques weren't used. We see high-speed chases that occur, putting lots of people at risk when maybe the alleged perpetrator was accused of doing doesn't exactly warrant putting that many people at risk. So yeah, I think those are the more important things. I think the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights is something where the devil is in the details, recognizing that ordinary state employees, government employees, get a similar protection.
Governor, I do want to follow up on that just for a minute, and that the Law Enforcement Accountability Task Force last week kind of decided against recommending either a review or an amendment to the Officers Bill of Rights or creating civilian review boards. I'm curious if you're worried, though, that there might be some people in the community who are concerned that there's not even a willingness to do a review. You mentioned the devil is in the details. Would not a review of those details be warranted? And if there isn't any kind of review, even, does that perhaps hurt police-community relations?
I think that the reviews are taking place, actually. The committee itself, the task force itself, in their work, did a review. I know the city of Wilmington, Mayor Przycki and his team is reviewing, Chief Tracy, their uses of force guidelines. As I said, I signed an executive order doing that at the state level and focusing on the training, which is done, you know, statewide for local departments as well. But yeah, I think that's critically important. When you think about these incidents that's occurred, it really is around your use of force. It really is around escalation or not. And I think people realize, and I think members of the task force realize, that law enforcement officers are put in very difficult situations where they have to make split second decisions, whether to shoot, not shoot, draw a weapon, not draw a weapon, you know, speed after somebody, not speed after somebody. And I think those are important factors in the whole analysis. But I think if you think about cameras, use of force, continued discussion of review, you know, they have one or passed one in the city of Wilmington, as I said. I think we're making progress. My focus, frankly, is as much or more on the violence and shootings that are occurring in the city of Wilmington. And we have a different kind of engagement with respect to that and law enforcement what we call group violent intervention, where we try to engage with the perpetrators. They're mostly in gangs or groups that are fighting one another, and they're fighting one another with guns. And with the message, look, put your guns down, we'll provide whatever assistance we can. And we've had a lot of people cross the line. We've had people that cross the line, join our effort, and then struck down by a bullet from somebody in another group on the streets of our. That is more concerning to me than all of this, frankly. And it does require a different kind of policing, frankly, that it is consistent with these reforms that everybody's looking at and talking about.
We're talking with Delaware Governor John Carney. And Governor Carney, we have a call from Wilmington. Ellen is on the line. Ellen, what's your question for Governor Carney?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I do have a question, but first I just want to compliment DelDOT on what I think, and maybe this is a minority opinion, what I think has been a terrific job in communications when it comes to the whole Restore the Corridor effort. I have just been really pleased by the advanced planning and awareness and the detail, and the app is great. I get emails, I get texts. It's really made it a lot easier. As somebody who lives in Wilmington and spends a fair amount of time on I-95, so thanks to DelDOT for that. But my question, completely switching gears here, is about the Black History Education Bill, which I was pleased to see has now been passed by the House and the Senate. And I was wondering, Governor, I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that bill, so I'd like to know what you plan to do with that, what your thoughts are on that bill.
Yeah, I certainly support the concept. The only kind of concern that I had generally, I don't know that it's a good idea to have the General Assembly establishing the curriculum for math, for social studies, science, et cetera. And this is a little bit different than that, obviously, a lot different than that. So I'm going to take a close look at it. I do support the idea of incorporating those topics. Obviously, Black history is an American history, an important part of it. And We are on our side doing a lot more through the year to not just in Black History Month to highlight the history of Delawareans of African descent, of slavery here in our state. You may know or have heard that there was just a very important discovery at the John Dickinson plantation there just south of the air base, with a burial ground for slave labor on that property. It's just a real opportunity to educate Delawareans about the good and bad of the history of Africans here in our state. And so, yeah, I support legislation that's passed. Makes me a little nervous to have the General Assembly being real specific about curriculum in schools, but the idea of more fully incorporating Black history into American history classes in our schools is really, really important and something I support.
Governor, thank you.
Governor, we want to get to some questions online. A couple of people are asking about early childhood education. Katie online, also we got an email question from Larry in Wilmington. Larry is specifically asking about purchase of care and whether or not there'll be more funding to bring purchase of care voucher levels up to market rate. I guess if you could speak to that specifically and just in general, what you'd like to accomplish in terms of early childhood education.
Yeah, I think early childhood education is incredibly important. You know, my father was an educator, and I remember he did a study up at Harvard University one summer and came back all excited about the possibility of getting children off to a healthier start and a strong academic start, and recognizing that, you've got to get to children really early before age three. And so early education has been a priority for our state now for about 10 years. 10 years ago, we barely put any money into early education at all. And now it's tens of millions of dollars, and we continue to make those investments. I'm particularly interested in early education for children from disadvantaged backgrounds. And part of our opportunity funding proposal was to provide school districts with extra resources to do just that. I think the caller's question goes around privately provided early education and child care centers. And we funded over $100 million to those to keep essential child care facilities open over the last year, and really supported those facilities by guaranteeing them payments, even though children weren't coming to the facilities and they couldn't accommodate with the distancing restrictions as many children. So yeah, there'll be additional resources. You know, one of the things that is in our budget, not just here in purchase of care for early education, but also for service professionals, is these market rates that they do, and they want the legislature and the governor to fully fund a market rate. And it's one of those things where you end up just chasing your tail all the time. And so we need to incorporate in our budget investments in early education and in their service providers that's sustainable in the long term. And that's what our goal is to do. Early education, critically important, I think, to making sure that, as I said a minute ago, our third graders can read on grade level when they get there, because they need to show up in kindergarten with skills, pre-reading, reading readiness skills, and be prepared to learn and learn how to read by grade three.
It's Ask Governor Carney on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. We're taking your phone calls at 888-477-9499. Abraham called in from Newark, Delaware. Abraham, thanks so much for joining us on Ask Governor Carney. What's your question for the governor?
Apply for unemployment approximately almost 3 months ago. And every time I call, they keep telling me they're working on it. I haven't received a check, and I am not sure if the governor is aware of this time frame of how long it's taking. They keep saying they're working on it, but I don't know what else to do. And I'm falling on hard times, but they keep saying they're working on it. I don't know.
Abraham, thank you.
Apologize for bait that you've encountered. I would encourage you to call our office, 577-3210, and talk to Javier Horseman, and he will help you at least find out what the situation is. Oftentimes, it's the data, the information that Department of Labor has on a particular constituent is different than, you know, than what they've been provided over the phone or in an application. And unfortunately, that can gum things up. But call the office, and we'll try to deal with your particular circumstance. And I apologize for the wait that you've had.
Okay. Governor, I do want to.
Can you give me that name again?
Yeah, Javier.
Javier. Okay, Javier.
Yeah, Governor. And it's 321-577-3210.
Abraham, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
And we're going to move back online with some questions there as well, Governor. One from Jordan. He asks, what is Delaware going to do about the opioid crisis? What do you plan on doing yourself to go to war on this epidemic, both at the state and national level? So he's looking for some more clarity on what the state wants to do in terms of battling opioid crisis.
Yeah, so it's a horrible scourge, you know, and it's not just in our state, it's states across the country. When I was in Congress representing our state as a sole member, it was an issue in each of my colleagues, rural areas, suburban areas, urban areas, and we see the same here in the state of Delaware. The Lieutenant Governor Hall Long has been doing a really good job working with the Behavioral Health Consortium, the Department of Health and Social Services, developing what they call a continuum of care. It turns out, as most folks know, that people who are suffering from this addiction, you know, they got to reach a point, maybe the lowest point, before they'll take the help that's necessary. The Lieutenant Governor has gone out and provided naloxone for those that are addicted so that they don't overdose. And when they do, someone can revive them. She's gone and provided those shots themselves. Oftentimes they'll end up in an emergency room. They'll get the naloxone, save their life, and then out of the emergency room they go, kind of looking for that the next high, because the naloxone takes away the craving, apparently. And so, yeah, it's a vexing problem, because I think the key is having the resources there for when people are ready to take the help. Because if they're not ready, you can't force them. These are mostly adults. I know of people, I'm sure, as I do, drive around and you see folks sitting on the side of the highways and byways, and you know that these folks are suffering from some addiction or some cause to their homelessness. And it is a very, very serious issue that a lot of people are working on, particularly Lieutenant Governor Hall Long. I'm convinced that the continuum of care approach and making sure that there are those options for people to get the assistance they need when they're ready, and providing kind of readiness help at that moment, to whether it's in the emergency room, whether it's in a family situation, not often the case, whether it's in an overdose situation, which ends up normally in the emergency room, wherever that might, or whether it's in a Delaware correctional facility for that matter.
We're listening to Ask Governor Carney. We've got another caller, Governor Carney. Brendan from Wilmington is on the line. Brendan, we have about 90 seconds. What's your question?
Hi, I have a question for the governor. My best friend is of Asian heritage, and I know they just passed national law, but I was wondering what Delaware was doing to get, help with the rise in violence against Asian Americans. Help combat, you know, the rise against violence in Asian Americans?
Yeah, I've not heard of any initiative in the General Assembly. I can tell you that as governor, wherever I go, in fact, I went to an event over the weekend in support of a Latina woman who was murdered in her place of work recently, to show support for that community. And I do that for all the various diverse communities in our state. As governor, obviously, I represent everyone in Delaware, and everybody, every group, subgroup, groups individually need to be treated with the same level of respect. And that's the message that we try to deliver on a day-to-day basis. We have events in various communities to show that kind of solidarity, which is what we did yesterday. But it is an issue that when you see some of these attacks that occur, mostly in other states, I'm not aware off the top of my head of those kinds of attacks that have occurred in Delaware. I know there's that kind of racist language and behavior out there, but I think the key is to demonstrate and to communicate a message of unity, that our strength is in the diversity here in Delaware and across our country.
And you're listening to Ask Governor Carney here on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. More of your calls coming up next. More Ask Governor Carney now with our guest, of course, Delaware Governor John Carney, and your questions at 888-477-9499, also on social media with the hashtag AskGovCarney. The General Assembly has about a month left to go. I think it's actually just 11 legislative days. There's a pair of gun bills, Governor, that have drawn a lot of attention, one requiring training and a permit for anybody buying a handgun. The other would ban high-capacity magazines. Opponents of these measures have said that they would make it more difficult for Delawareans to defend themselves. Do you support these measures? Do you think they'll get through this year?
We'll see. I do support them, yes. We'll see whether there has enough support in the legislature. As to the claim that they will make it more difficult for Delawareans to defend themselves, I would argue that it doesn't take a large capacity magazine for anybody to defend him or herself. It certainly isn't a requirement of hunters. And we have a strong hunting heritage and community here in our state. And frankly, we need the deer hunters that are out there that to thin the herd that creates real problems, particularly in Kent and Sussex County, with respect to crop damage. In fact, we have special permits that farmers can get to take more deer than's otherwise allowed if they can determine severe crop damage. And we know we have a lot of those permits. But again, you don't need an assault type weapon to shoot deer, and you certainly don't need a high capacity magazine. With respect to the permit, the purpose there is really to get at the straw purchases problem that we have, where somebody goes in who's legally able to buy a gun for somebody else, and we know that there are those guns on the street. My focus, again, and I don't want anybody to lose focus on the real problem in our state, which is handgun violence, handgun violence in the city of Wilmington and Dover and Seaford and other communities across the state. And that's why I talk and promote group violence intervention and our efforts to really strike at the core of that. If you think about the Wilmington problem, it's really, I've lived in Wilmington now for 30, 35 years, and love the neighborhood I live in. Used to coach in the Y League and the city leagues, and you know, was in Hicks Anderson and on the east side and the west side of Byard, and never have felt unsafe or threatened. And the violence is really among a small number of folks that are involved in groups and, you know, kind of and gangs and fighting against one another. So, you know, we estimate 200, 300, 400 mostly young men who are involved in these groups, and our effort is to get to them before they shoot one another, get them to put their guns down, get them to see that this is not going to lead anywhere good. We've had some success. The COVID-19 has really made it difficult to do the one-on-one interventions, some of which take place in our correctional facilities. We do call-ins where we bring, in fact, just had one recently with two of the groups that are one side of the two groups that are fighting with one another. To me, that's the scourge that we need to address in our state. High capacity magazines to prevent the mass shootings that we see. I haven't seen them, thank God, here in Delaware, but across the country, not necessary for someone to defend themselves or for a deer hunter or bird hunter.
Governor, I want to talk a little bit about education now. Following the settlement of the state education funding lawsuit, the General Assembly has passed legislation to make the opportunity funding that you've championed permanent and is expected to fund it as required by the settlement. But there are some lawmakers and advocates who feel like more is needed. And there was a concurrent resolution offered in the legislature last week that was looking to require the Department of Education to report information to help illuminate systemic inequalities in the current education funding system to help inform future legislators. Where do you stand on what's next after this lawsuit? Do you feel that more is needed, and what could that more look like?
Well, more is contained in the opportunity funding proposal that I made to the General Assembly. We were committed to that from day one. One of the things that I learned when I was Lieutenant Governor that really disturbed me was the achievement gap that existed between students of color and the general student population. I call that an opportunity gap, and that's why we created opportunity funding. We ratcheted up opportunity funding in a significant way as part of the settlement talks with those who had sued the state. And you know, in a real stretch way, I didn't want to make a commitment that the state couldn't follow through on. And so we did make a stretch commitment, which is contained in my budget, the first year of which, and we'll continue to fund those commitments in that agreement. So the idea, I don't buy the idea that there certainly are other things to do, but I don't think we should throw money just to show a larger commitment without determining whether the resources that we're putting to address the problem of this gap are having an effect. And I think the most important thing that we work with former Senator McDowell on in the and the opportunity funding 2 years ago was to set up a committee that would evaluate how the districts were using and the schools were using these additional resources targeted for students from low-income backgrounds and English learners, just the ones that are not reading at grade level and the numbers that they need to. That's the stretch that we've made. There are other things that are part of that that can help us achieve that. We've talked about early education. There's legislation in to provide social and emotional counseling support. That's critically important, and each district and each school ought to be able to make the determination as to how they will use those resources. And we will continue to meet our obligation. It is the most important thing that as governor I will be doing for the children of our state, the families of our state, the strength of our communities. If we want strong cities and towns, then we need to produce students who can read and write, do math, and be prepared to go into the workforce productively.
But Governor, would you welcome though a report like this resolution is looking for from DOE, looking at the system itself, just kind of like the nuts and bolts of it, looking for inequities, not necessarily asking for more money, but trying to figure out if there's still problems within the system itself?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the resolution. I'm always looking at finding solutions to the inequities that we know exist. When I say inequities, I mean achievement levels, third grade reading, middle school math, graduation rates from high school. Those three indicators should tell us, and we know we have it broken down by race and ethnicity, how well our students are doing, and by geography and by income. And we could tell the legislature tomorrow, today, what those challenges are. Third grade reading among students in the city of Wilmington, where we focus most of our efforts in the Christina schools in the city, there's not a school with proficiency rate over 30%. I visited an elementary school in rural Kent County just a couple weeks ago. Reading proficiency third grade, 77%. We need to have all our students at third grade reading at 70% or above. Anything less than that is just not acceptable. You talk about inequity, that's an inequity. Everybody ought to be rolling up their sleeves and spending all their time and energy making sure that those children get off to the right start academically, and it starts by learning how to read.
We're talking with Delaware Governor John Carney here on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. Governor, Delaware's neighbors have been moving forward with marijuana legalization. New Jersey voters approving it last year. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf now pushing for it as well. You've been fairly consistent, very consistent in your position against legalizing marijuana in Delaware. Has there been any change in that position? As you've seen kind of the regional landscape shift and states much closer to Delaware now are moving forward with legalization?
Look, I just don't think it's a good idea. And I spent 8 years as lieutenant governor spending a lot of time trying to convince Delawareans to live a healthier lifestyle, eat a healthy diet, get regular physical activity, you know, go to your doctor and regularly so you can catch things before they get out of control, making sure on the cancer side that you get colorectal screening. So that I just had a good friend die of cancer, somebody I played football with in college. It's just, you know, those kinds of things break your heart, and they're preventable. And the campaign, you'll remember Governor Minner, when I was lieutenant governor, championed the Enduro ban on smoking cigarettes.
Sure. Yep.
So we spend all this time and money to get people to stop smoking cigarettes, and now we want to say it's okay to smoke marijuana recreationally. Look, I don't want to sound like a prude about it. I just don't think it's a good idea. We have medical marijuana for those who need it for therapeutic purposes. As I look at other states that have it, it just doesn't seem to me to be a very positive thing from the strength of the community, of the economy in their states. Is it the worst thing in the world? No, of course not. But champion something that seems to me to be unhealthy you know, when I hear, we talked just a minute ago about the opioid problem. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to the parents of some of these folks that have overdosed and passed away, they don't think it's a good idea because they remember the trajectory of their own sons and daughters. And I'm not suggesting that that's always a gateway for all of that, but if you talk to those attack addiction advocates, they don't think it's a very good idea.
So as we come up towards the end of the show here, it's yes or no, if it passes as it's currently constructed, would you veto it?
I don't know how it's currently constructed. I think it's a bad idea. I'm not going to say whether I'm going to veto or sign anything.
Fair enough, Tom.
You are listening to Ask Governor Carney. The number is 888-477-9499, or you can ask a question via social media at AskGovCarney. Governor, the Joint Finance Committee reconvenes this week to mark up the 2022 budget over the next couple of weeks. Latest DFACT numbers last Monday indicated revenue up about $750 million since the December DFACT, which you used to craft your budget proposal. After setting aside some of the surplus via the so-called budget smoothing process, are there some other things, capital projects, grant and aid, other programs that you would support JFC adding money to as they begin the markup process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are certain things that we're working together on, some of which we talked about in this discussion over the last hour. I mentioned counseling and social emotional supports, which is one of the pieces of legislation. You know, the question is how do you do it and allow districts and schools to kind of make their own decisions about the level of funding? How do you incorporate it into opportunity funding as we already have? We talked about the early education and market studies there. We talked about service professionals and issues there. The question really is, or the challenge really is, we've got a lot of one-time revenue, right? And just look back, you only have to look back 4 years now to see what I explained 4 years ago, that we have these boom and bust revenue cycles. And if we allow ourselves to appropriate into a boom revenue like we are now, a lot of that extraordinary revenue is coming from a hot real estate market, particularly in Sussex County, which is just churning out real estate transfer taxes like there's no tomorrow for state and local governments. And our corporate franchise tax center of excellence, which is seeing a huge increase there. We're not seeing it in the personal income tax, which is really kind of the baseline revenue source. And we're not seeing it in some of the other taxes that we have. So we know that this is one of those revenue bubbles. And we need to be careful with the guidance of the budget smoothing approach and the executive order that I passed when the General Assembly did not pass the constitutional amendment. The last 4 years proved that approach works, because we had the decline last year in revenue because of the pandemic, and we were able to use some of that surplus revenue that we had set aside in the budget stabilization fund to get us through that year. And now we're in another year with higher levels of revenue than expected, mostly one time in nature. So we should use them for one time projects, and we have a ton. We have a courthouse in Kent County that needs to be done, Sussex County first. They need to be fully funded. That's over, could be close to $200 million. We have lots of school construction projects. I want to build a new school on the east side of Wilmington, which is, you know, between $50 and $100 million. There are lots. We have water and wastewater needs across our state. Our governor's recommended budget included resources there. We could add more to those accounts. We can add more to our accounts to protect farmland and open space, which is critically important in our state. And we have significant resources to make investments in our economic infrastructure. And that's what I'll be encouraging the General Assembly to do over the next month and a week or so.
And Governor, as we come to the end of the hour, maybe add one more item to that list of projects on behalf of all the drivers who've been caught in the Biden backup. Anytime President Biden returns home to Wilmington, any chance you could work with DelDOT in the White House maybe to get a helipad over at Biden's house in Greenville so traffic doesn't get backed up every time he comes home on the weekend?
Well, it sounds like a federal obligation to me, but it certainly would help to fly a helicopter into his house as opposed to routing him from Newcastle, the Delaware River Bay Authority Airport to his home there across the county.
It's certainly been an interesting discovery, I think, for lots of motorists to see what that process is like.
Yeah, it is amazing the protective measures they take these days for the president. Unfortunately, I guess, but fortunately, they do it to keep our Joe safe, our president. And it is a burden to bear, but we get a lot more positive out of our first Delawarean to become president of the United States.
Well, Governor Carney, I want to thank you for your time. I really appreciate you being open and joining us for this hour.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed the conversation, enjoyed the questions. I love what you guys do. I make a point to listen to you every morning and every night. And we appreciate you guys being on the beat to make sure that Delawareans get the real information necessary to determine their support or not for what's happening in state and local government.
Thank you, Governor. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, guys.
For Tom Byrne, I'm Mark Eichmann. Thanks for joining us.